You're listening to Higher Ed Social, episode 73. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Logan. And this week we talked to Daniel Shelnut, an academic advisor at the University of Southern Florida. We had some very interesting conversations starting out this week. Found out that Daniel is from North Carolina, just like I am. He's from the Denver of the South, which is interesting. I'm from Western North Carolina, which is, you know, a little ways away from there. But we definitely had an interesting conversation about that. Jackie also got a little excited about the Buffalo Bills because they won a game, which is pretty good for them.
Pretty good. Come on now. It's the Buffalo Bills.
But we do talk a lot about sports. It's exceptional for them to win a game.
Well, we are at least not going to go with zero wins for the season. So we do talk a lot about sports, not just the Buffalo Bills, I promise. And Daniel tells us that it's his birthday. So if you're listening to this on Daniel's birthday, happy birthday, Daniel. He's turning the big 3-0. So we talk a little bit about his birthday plans. And Dan also shares with us his class that he's teaching alongside with being an academic advisor. And some interesting points about that, because this is it's a first-year experience course of sorts, and this is the first time that it's sorted out by major. So he works exclusively with mass communication majors, which has its own sets of pros and cons. So we hope that you enjoy this episode of Higher Ed Social.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome
we appreciate to the show. It. Woohoo! Logan probably already started recording. I should probably have mentioned that earlier.
We're going to start. It literally just started recording, yeah. As you said. Welcome to the show. So we're good.
Gotcha.
Well, welcome. We appreciate you connecting with us.
Yes.
So why don't you? Because I always forget to do it. Introduce yourself. Who you are, what you do. However you want to introduce yourself is fine.
Sure. My name is Daniel Shelnut. I currently reside in Tampa, Florida, where I am an academic advisor with the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of South Florida. My primary responsibility, along with my fantastic co-advisor, is to advise the students that are part of the Zimmerman School of Advertising and Mass Communications, which consists of the typical print journalism, broadcast journalism, but also delves into the public relations side of things and advertising as well. I've been there for about a little over 2.5 years now. I should also mention, full disclosure, that USF is also my alma mater. Now I'm living the dream that I had when I was an RA and when I was an OTL back in the 2000s at some point. Before this, I was a resident director at Coastal Carolina near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And before that, I did my grad work at the University of South Carolina. Go Gamecocks.
Wow, you have been all over. Are you from the South Carolina area? Or are you
Grew up in the Carolinas.
Where in Carolina?
In the Carolinas. A little town called Denver of the East. About 20 miles north of Charlotte. Made a little bit of national jokes earlier this year because the Carolina Panthers happened to be playing the Denver Broncos. So obviously Denver, North Carolina was, a little bit of a funny anecdote that people told. This is the Denver that's in North Carolina.
So it's between Winston-Salem and Charlotte?
In and around, yeah. It's very close to Hickory.
Okay. So I'm from Rutherfordton, Spindale.
Okay.
Right around there. So it's just south of Morganton.
Okay. Is that closer to the mountains?
Like half the county's in the mountains and the other half isn't. So we're kind of the foothills. But I have a lot of friends that are from Valdez, which is not too far from there. Anyway, I know where you're from. I'm from North Carolina too. So hi.
Very cool.
Or at least I lived there for like 8 years. So I consider that. Some level of, I've lived there a while, so.
I lived in North Carolina for about the better part of my first 17 years, and then I moved down to Florida the summer before my senior year of high school. So then in-state tuition got into the decision to attend USF. Mm-hmm. It was not my first choice. Actually, Appalachian State was, because it was my first choice throughout high school.
My nephew went there. He just graduated this year.
It's really funny, just a very small world. I teach a freshman seminar class, mm-hmm. And one of my students, her first choice was Appalachian State as well. Was completely familiar with Denver, North Carolina, mm-hmm. which, you know, that was the town slogan was, you know, if you're here, you're either driving through or you're living here. So,
most towns in North Carolina.
Yep. It was interesting just how small of a world it is.
I always found it interesting how, you know, in North Carolina, it is more densely populated than Tennessee, mm-hmm. because you drive literally from one town to another and there's like some farmland out there, but there's not like a whole lot until you get out to East North Carolina, like way mm-hmm. out there. But you know, in Tennessee, like you'll drive for 15, 20 miles and just see nothing but mm-hmm. trees and like pasture. Mm-hmm. And I always like North Carolina because it's, you know, for all the stuff people say about it lately, it's actually a really great state. It really is.
You know, and you know, North Carolina is a great state. It has some great people in it, you know, and hopefully some of its troubles will be fixed soon, to say the least. You know, the ACC in the last couple of weeks announced that they're moving their championship games out of North Carolina for that exact reason.
Which is crazy because the ACC is centered in North Carolina, like their headquarters.
This is a big deal for them. And the NBA All-Star Game also moved out of Charlotte. So, you know, now you're starting to see, you know, the business impact of this decision, which, of course, you know, isn't as big as the human impact of that bill. But, you know, now you're starting to see where people were who normally would ignore that side of things. You're starting to see them now saying, you know, wait a minute, this is actually impacting, you know, the people that maybe aren't so personally affected by this.
I mean, Facebook's already got a huge data center in Forest City, which is like part of the county where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And I know they're really, really against it. Like one of the big Facebook data centers is there, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, the how much sports really permeates into our culture. You know, people keep talking about the Colin Kaepernick situation, and you know, is it his place to, as an athlete, to do what he's doing? And my argument to that's always been, you know, he's the perfect person to do this because, you know, he reaches more people than most people would ever dream of reaching. You know. The NAACP back before I went to South Carolina, you know, they were able to convince the NCAA to not have any tournament games in Columbia, South Carolina, because of their refusal to move the Confederate flag. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not sure if the NCAA plans on moving things back there, but, you know, that's the reason that the NCAA doesn't have games in Columbia, that beautiful arena that they have. So, you know.
Well, in other sports news. Depressing mm-hmm. sports news. Arnold Palmer died.
Really?
2016 sucks.
It wow. Like,
well, there was also
some people may not even argue that he's the biggest sports death of the day. That's tragic.
Yeah. I was gonna say I just heard about the pitcher for, is it the Marlins mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. passed away in a boat accident? Yeah.
He was a rising star too.
He was. He was originally from Cuba. And it was a big deal that his, you know, grandmother earlier this season got to watch him pitch for the first time ever, you know, thanks in part to the more liberal travel guidelines from Cuba to the U.S. But, you know, it's just a tragedy, especially when you see somebody like him. You know, he's so young and he had a huge future in front of him. So, right. You know, hopefully his family's able to get through this.
Yeah. I was watching, I just had the TV on today, kind of background noise, and they were talking about him and they kept calling him a kid, which was kind of odd to me because it's funny that, like, working in higher ed, you know, we work with 17, typically, we'll say a typical college student, 17 to, you know, 20 year olds, and get, you know, slapped on the wrist if you call them a kid. And the pitcher, I forget his name, I apologize, was 24. And I'm like, he's not a kid. Like, you know, he's an adult. And it was very interesting, even though he was so young in his, kind of in the scope of his game, you know, to call him that was very interesting. But that's really sad. It was interesting that it was like a whole broadcast about it today. Yep.
I saw on Twitter, I follow all of USF's athletics teams because I'm a big USF athletics fan. The women's soccer team is up in Virginia right now playing Old Dominion. And they had mentioned that for the last 8 goals, all of them were born past 1996. And I mean, that was my daily I'm getting old moment.
Yeah, it's scary.
And I turned 30 next month. I can remember where I was in 1996. Like, I can remember exact details.
I won't tell you. I mean,
I can remember songs from back then. And I was, well,
I make fun of Logan for being old. It's easy.
I was looking, I was on the internet, and after my like crappy day last week, you know, I was looking for something on the internet to make me happy. And there was a video of Angela Lansbury singing, you know, a song from Beauty and the Beast. And I was like, wow, that makes me so happy. And she did it for its 25th anniversary.
She was Mrs. Potts, right?
She was.
And she's still old. And I covered my face.
Of course she's so old. She's 25 years older than she was.
She was old in Murder, She Wrote.
She was. I mean, yeah.
So I just covered my face and just went, the students weren't even born yet. None of the students at Belmont were born yet, except for maybe the grad students and the adult students, but everybody else was not even a twinkle in their parents' eye.
Well, I've stopped even looking at the Beloit College list because it just depresses me, honestly.
No, yeah, don't do that.
When did Lion King come
out? I know BuzzFeed always comes out with an article every year about, like, things that the incoming freshman class of college students don't understand. And they'll, like, list all of the things. And every year it gets more and more depressing.
It's Beloit that does that, right?
Is it? I thought it was a BuzzFeed article.
No, BuzzFeed steals it from Beloit.
Got it.
Sorry. Beloit's been doing it for a long time.
I apologize, Beloit. I did not mean any offense.
We will post it in our show notes.
Yes, it's very scary. Well, I think it's the class of 20. It's either a class of 20 or 21, that, which is crazy to think about, that will have been born in the 2000s and not the 90s. I think it's maybe next year's class.
Yeah, but I think it'll be next year's class. You know, yeah.
Relatively. Stereotypically. But yeah, it's like insane. That's insane to think about. And I know that I'm like the youngest one on this ship today, but that's scary to me. And that's how Logan must have felt when my class was enrolling 50 years after he was born. I'm kidding. Yeah. Logan's distracted. He didn't even get the insult.
I'm doing math in my head.
I called you old, Logan.
Yeah, the class of 2017 was either born in 99 or 2000.
Or 2000. Yeah, depending on what age they come in. Yeah. I started college at 17, so.
Yeah, I started at 17 as well.
Yep. I was an October baby, so.
Nice. Birthday coming up.
Yep. It's,
what are you doing?
Probably hiding.
No, I was 18. I graduated when I was 17. I started college at 18 because my birthday's in July. I don't know what.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So you're turning 30, big 3-0.
I'm turning the big 3-0 next month.
So. I feel like that's like a big, granted, I'm 25, so I've not had my 30th birthday, so I cannot like advise you on this, but I feel like that's like a big deal birthday and you need to make a big party of it. Logan saying,
you know, much to my supervisor's chagrin, I've never been much of a big party person.
You can like get a bunch of like nice food or like go to a good dinner or a like a show or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Rent a limo.
But for now, I'm happy just trying to avoid the fact that it's coming.
I will actually be. Well, there you go.
So that's
I will be in Tampa. Not that it's close to you, because you know all of Florida is the same thing.
No, it's very close. Yeah, that's where.
In the middle of October, I will be in Tampa, so I can come to your birthday party. It'll be so
fun. Very cool. What brings you to Tampa? I know there's a lot of fun.
Yes, I am a Bills fan, no matter how much it pains me. But we had a win, folks. We obviously do not record this on the same day it is out, so it was recorded on Sunday. Bills won today against Arizona. Now we're 1-2, so we will not have an 0-16 record for the season.
That's what
and
Titans
so
are for.
Every year I go with a bunch of people to a Bills away game, and this year it's Tampa. So nice. I'll be seeing them. Miami, because I know you're in Tampa. I'll be in Miami.
So
was the whole story. So I was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, he's over on the Tampa side. I'll be in at the Miami game in October. So, you know, because, well, how far is it to get across Florida?
So it takes, because I traveled to Miami last year for the Bulls Bowl game. Mm-hmm. Say that three times fast. it takes about 3.5 hours. The way I drive, 4 hours for your typical person though. So
got it.
It's that driving through a lot of depressing flatness and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not terrible. To get across New York State, it's about 5 hours, I think.
Okay.
4.5.
To get from Tampa to Miami, you have to go on Alligator Alley, which is really
that's adorable.
60 miles and nothingness. Or
imagine
you have to
flat marshlands for 60 miles and nothing. Nothing.
That's kind of how it
used to do that to go to Disney World back when I was a kid. Ugh.
Do you go to Disney all the time? I feel like I would.
I do not. You know, I don't go as much as I'd like to. Number one, it is ridiculously expensive.
That is true.
And for me, I'm not somebody that really, as an introvert, I'm not somebody that really digs crowds that much. But I've definitely gone a couple times since moving back a couple of years ago. My sister who lives close to here, she used to work in the pet resort. My brother-in-law used to act in one of the shows. So
fun.
Yes.
That's so fun.
Yep.
I have a bunch of friends that did the Disney College program, so that was cute.
A couple of my students do that as well. That's an annual thing where we discuss, you know, that program and how unfortunately we can't accept credit for it, but you can get some great internship credit for it. So
you can. Yes. I've heard some mixed reviews about the program, and not that this is a review of the Disney College program, but I've heard some mixed reviews about it. Some people love it and some people get assignments that they don't really have any desire to do. So that's kind of a bummer.
Right.
But, I mean, you get to hang out with Mickey Mouse. So come on.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Disney has kind of set the standard as far as, you know, customer-centered customer service goes. And I think
that is very true.
Some people really strive in that environment. And some people do struggle in that. So, you know, they do, down to the last detail, really limit the expression that you can have. And, you know, for things like coloring your hair or, you know, wearing a certain number of earrings. So, you know, again, if a student is okay with that, then they might strive in that environment, but otherwise, you know, if that's something that they really value, the ability to express themselves, you know, in that way, you know, they may not work so well in that environment. So that's something that we definitely talk about, in the early stages when they talk about, you know, I want to do the Disney College program because I'm a big fan of Disney. Well, I know you, so let's talk about, you know, would you be okay with this and would you be okay with,
Yeah. So are you working with undergraduates and graduate students?
Primarily undergraduate students.
Okay. Very cool.
Probably 99% of the work that we do is with undergrads. The work that we do with grad students is mostly just graduate students that have mistakenly set an appointment with us. One of the first things that that I did upon getting my second or third appointment with a graduate student is to speak with the graduate coordinator with our school and get a little bit of information that way. You know, I can give them some information and then direct them to somebody who has a lot more information about the grad program.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Because our graduate program primarily attracts a lot of international students as well. The graduate coordinator for our school knows a lot more about international regulations and things like that than I would. So.
Nice. That makes sense.
That's neat. So what is your background in terms of like your degree that got you into academic advising? Did you just kind of fall into it, or were you planning on going that way? You said you were an RA, so.
I was. When I was an undergrad, I saw a flyer to be an orientation team leader. And I've always been a very independent person. That was my first year living away from home. So I thought this was a great way to keep living on campus over the summer, not have to pay for it, get paid for it. That'd be a good summer job, because at that time I didn't have anything. So I took the job and just had a ball with it. I got to really connect with the director, who's still there today, actually, mm-hmm. A decade later. Worked in that office for a year, then became an RA, and that was a great experience as well. Switched my career track from being the world's greatest elementary school teacher to trying to be the world's greatest student life professional. So South Carolina had a great program, has a great program. Took that opportunity, got an assistantship up there, and then went to Coastal Carolina to be a resident director for a few years. Mm-hmm. But I've always wanted to come back to USF. So when that opportunity came up, it just so happened that a connection that I made my freshman year of undergrad was beneficial in me earning this position. He spoke really highly of me. He had me as a teaching assistant my last year at USF. My current supervisor, who's also really into social media as well, we had connected, me and my supervisor, on social media. We were both part of the SA chat, Twitter chat that goes on Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
She knew my potential. She saw, my involvement in that. Actually, I had the opportunity to moderate for that for a semester. Unfortunately, I can't currently because I teach on Tuesday and Thursday nights. Interviewed for a position in this school, and actually got a call back about a half an hour later. So it was all very serendipitous,
Hi.
Because with housing interviews or housing positions, a university really wants to make sure that, if you're going to a placement conference, that you actually have positions for which to hire. So in these tight budget times. So at that time, I'd already resigned from Coastal effective at the end of that school year. Mm-hmm. It was really great to be able to get into academic advising. And prior to this, I'd actually been a summer advising intern at the University of Central Florida with their first year advising and exploration office. So, mm-hmm. I knew that academic advising was just a great fit for me personally. I'm a very counseling-based person. I'm really into the developmental side of advising. Big believer in appreciative advising and Dr. Jennifer Bloom's model of appreciative advising. Right now I'm doing the role that I feel that I'm really meant for. And for that, I'm very grateful.
That's awesome.
That's so neat.
Yep.
Everyone has a fun story.
Yeah.
We like to ask.
Been there for about 2.5 years, and I think really made a great impression thus far on the staff over there. We started there with 3 advisors. We now have 2 because with journalism being where it is, enrollment's dropped a little bit. I think the 4 of us that work at the communication side, we have mass communications, communication and information studies, and 4 academic advisors for those about 2,000 students that go between those 4 majors.
Mm-hmm.
We've really developed a really solid team, just a lot of positivity, a lot of initiative, a lot of innovation, which I personally thrive in, is that ability to innovate and create new solutions to problems. So being able to, have a supervisor that just says, that trusts, I think, her advisors to do great work, has just been really great.
Sounds really rewarding.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I love my students to death. I've been a lot more relaxed with them on Twitter as far as, you know, engaging with them. Mm-hmm. You know, being in housing, I think we really try to put up those walls between us and the students as far as outside of the office.
Right.
Now I think, you know, students and advisors see that mutual relationship between, you know, we want to help you succeed after graduation. You know, we are it's a mutual relationship to see you succeed both here and after. So, mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, is, you know, that engagement on social media.
Do you get to do any mentoring or anything?
As far as I do have the ability to mentor with a current student leader. Mm-hmm. She is my teaching assistant for the Academic Foundations class.
Cool.
So she's also the first year seminar. So she's also a mass communications student. And we got to know each other really well over the course of the summer orientation because she was also an OTL.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
So that's the course you're teaching now. Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Is this the first time you're teaching it?
This is the third year that I'm teaching it.
But
the first year that it is just mass communications majors.
So
what's the
we really got to work with relevance. So,
is there anything like cool and special about the course? Like, what kinds of stuff do you talk about?
Yes. So with one of the benefits of having all mass communication students is that during our first class, actually, the individual whose namesake is on our school, Jordan Zimmerman, he is the founder and CEO of Zimmerman Advertising, which is a huge advertising group down in Fort Lauderdale. He actually came to speak during our first class session. So I took my class over to that lecture on the first class. This Tuesday, the creative director of the Tampa Bay Lightning is speaking to our advertising club. So I get to take my class over there. So being able to really create a relevant syllabus, being able to really connect that class and some of the things that some of the objectives of that class to what they want to do long term, I think has made a really relevant, fun class for the students. So. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
That's really fun.
Yep.
So how does it change? So what was it like before when you had like a mix of majors? You said you're now teaching only mass comm majors.
Right. The general population. So I think when you're dealing with a lot of mixed majors, it can be difficult at times to find some common connections and to find some lessons and some objectives that all the students will find relevant. And I think that issue of relevance was something that was really noticed with students in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having this class to where, you know, they're all wanting to go into mass communications, whether it's broadcasting or public relations, and being able to cater that syllabus to their needs, mm-hmm. both over these next 4 years and beyond, has made it a great experience for them.
Yeah. And that, I mean, especially when they're first year students and you're putting them within their major, they're going to be taking classes with these students for probably the rest of their career. And to build those relationships early is really helpful. I know that I went to a smaller state school mm-hmm. and my program was fairly, I would say small to medium sized. And so I got to know my classmates so quickly because we were taking, you know, even in that semester, I'm in the same class, you know, three different classes in one semester with the same person. And so you get to be pretty close friends and it helps a lot, no matter what degree you're in. So that's good. That's neat.
Yeah.
A lot more relationship, more beneficial relationship building in that environment.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good. But working with first years, when I was an RA for 2 years and both years I was living in first year housing. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there were some pros and cons.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're interesting.
When I was an RA, I did my first 2 years in the same building, first year building, traditional style, very much a quote unquote dorm, as much as that is a dirty word in housing. It was a typical dormitory style to where it was a common bathroom and everything like that. And I loved it. You know, I think the connections that the students made in those type of environments, and I've always been an advocate of that type of environment for students' first year. Especially now that, you know, a lot of these students are coming in and never having the challenge of having to share a bedroom or share mm-hmm. a bathroom. So being able to face that challenge of, you know, here is somebody that you may not agree with all the time. Here is somebody that may have different values than you. But your challenge is now to coexist in that same environment with the other students. So, And that was actually where I was for a resident director. My 2 years at Coastal was first year residence hall. So.
Those are always the interesting ones.
Yeah. And now, now most of my population is mostly upperclassmen because USF, like a lot of schools, most first years come in the sciences. Hmm. And, you know, they may underestimate the challenge that comes with the science curriculum at a university, especially a research university. They may decide that that's not what they want to do. They may decide that their priorities are have switched around a little bit, so they look for mass communications because, you know, they enjoy social media, they're creative, they like to write, and public relations and advertising journalism is a great place for them to be as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So most of my population is upperclassmen, so being able to work with the few first years we have is really rewarding as well.
Yeah, that's fun. That's actually what I did. I started when I was at school, I thought I wanted to be a physics teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I took some physics classes and math classes. And I realized that I probably did not want to actually teach physics. And as much as I liked the sciences, it wasn't what I was truly like passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to do graphic design. So I started doing that. And long, long time later, winding down different paths, I ended up with a communications degree and a computer mm-hmm. science degree. So I always tell students, no matter what year they are, that it's probably going to be different down the road and that it's okay.
You know, and one of my current projects is we have a Friends and Family Weekend in a couple weeks. And one of the initiatives that I'm taking on is I've collaborated with a lot of the advisors in the more liberal arts side of the College of Arts and Sciences to create a seminar for parents of first-year students who, after their first semester, are realizing, I can't do biomed. So, you know, here is a collection of 8 or 9 advisors in the liberal arts, English, philosophy, humanities, health sciences. Mm-hmm. You know, here are some career options. It is not the end of the world if your student wants to now become an English major.
Ask that to me once it's created, because I feel like there's so many parents that could use that.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
You know, and that is, believe it or not, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I never thought that myself 3 years ago would say this, that's one of the areas I miss is working with parents as often as I did in housing.
Really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, even like the crazy parents, even the helicopter parents.
The lawnmower parents, the weed eater
parents. The snowplow parents, you know, there's
yeah, whatever they call them.
10,000 different analogies platform. I think that that's just part of the equation. And I think that, you know, with snowplow parents and helicopter parents, you know, I think that you're dealing with parents that are very passionate about seeing their students succeed. Mm-hmm. And they want to make sure that their student has a good experience. So I really can't blame them too much for that. You know, and I completely understand that they get frustrated at times. But, you know, one of the perspectives I think I've gained from dealing so much with parents, especially at an institution like Coastal, which had a lot of out-of-state students, is that, you know, the ability to see things from multiple perspectives. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true. We had a lot of, I don't know if you do, Logan, but we have a lot of parents contacting us on social media asking mm-hmm. about things, and it's like, your kid's gonna be okay, I promise.
It's been kind of quiet this year.
Don't worry about it. We've gotcha.
Most of the stuff that parents come in and say is they're like, oh my gosh, my kid goes here whenever mm-hmm. we...
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. That's most nice of stuff. Our interactions we've had are just parents proud that their kids are here, so.
That's nice stuff. Go ahead.
I was saying I had a parent earlier this semester just... you know, the sweetest person in the world, just, you know, you've been the greatest person that we've interacted here with at USF. So, you know, this is like at 9 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, you want to hear something that just makes your day.
That
was definitely
good.
A good experience. So, it was the same, parent that actually, her, she's a sophomore now. her students actually about to graduate. During her first year seminar, she actually invited her mom into the end of the semester project, where it was, you know, a video diary of, you know, your first semester at USF. So she actually invited her mom in, and, you know, it was really sweet. It was a good moment.
That's so cute. Yeah. Aww. Yeah. Nice.
So, that's awesome. As a Gilmore Girls fan, it's nice to see that relationship is always fiction. So,
how are you feeling about the fact that it's coming back?
I am psyched about the fact that it's coming back.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to
Amy Sherman Palladino being able to give us her vision for the last couple of episodes. So,
I'm a little nervous though, because like, I fear that like all the good feelings I had about like the original Gilmore Girls, like mm-hmm. I'm worried that with all this time that's passed, like it might go the wrong way and I might get sad.
Yeah. So we might have a Fuller House situation to where.
Yes, I was just about to say that, but I didn't know if I got the reference. Yeah, Fuller House I've been watching because it's just fun to like relive DJ and Stephanie and Kimmy. Mm-hmm. But
it's pretty bad.
I listen to it. I watch it because they've been breaking the fourth wall occasionally, which is really cute. Mm-hmm. They'll make some sly remarks about Michelle, aka Mary Kate, and Ashley Olsen, yeah. and how they're not around, and like, oh, this is so nice. Like Michelle would never have to create her own fashion line if she bought stuff like this. It was pretty funny. But other than that, no, I can't say it's been the best show, but you know, or even Girl Meets World.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. That was worse than Fuller House, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah,
I never gave it a chance. So I watched I'm watching Homeland. So
just my Jackie's critique of the evening of these shows that are on Netflix. But I think I'm getting the signal from Logan. I think we're out of time on that note. We are. So thank you so much, Daniel, for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And listeners, thank you too. We really appreciate you listening to us every week. Don't forget to visit us online. We're at higher-ed.social. You can get links to all the things that we talked about today. But you can also subscribe to us. We're on iTunes and on Stitcher. And please leave us a review. We really appreciate nice reviews or not so nice reviews. We appreciate them all. You can also connect with us on Twitter. We're at HES Podcast, and you can tweet at us. We want to know you. We want to meet you. We also want to stalk you on Twitter, like I did with Daniel. So if you want to be on the show, let us know. But have a great week, guys.
You too. Thank you again for having me.
See you later.
Yeah, thank you.